This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
To score two goals, I expect only one. But it was unbelievable welcome that this crowd gave me, the supporters. They sing all game my name, so I was very nervous. But, you know, I belong to this club, so I want to help the team, you know, to achieve good things, great things. And I'm looking forward for the next games. Of course, they know my celebrations. They waiting for my celebration. So I did today's because it's my mark. So, but the most important, it's the team. It was my day, I know, but it's finished. What I want, it's to help the team to win games. As I told you before, we have huge potential. We have a fantastic players, good coach. We have a good team, and we need to build up the mentality to win the Premier League and even the Champions League. So I'm here to help the team, and I think we have the 11s that will play, and we have players in the bench that they can help as well. So as I told you, we have a good team, and the spirit is there.
Off the Ball kicks off now on BFM 89.9.
Cristiano Ronaldo's second coming in Manchester, yielding a brace and a 4-1 win for the Red Devils over Newcastle United at the weekend. What's up? It's me, Ross. This is Off the Ball. I nearly said on the ball. This is Off the Ball on a Monday evening. I'm here with the guys. Cam Razlan is here. Hello, Cam.
Hello, Ross.
Nice to have you with us. I trust you watch loads of football over the weekend.
Yes.
Good answer. Arvind Sidhu is also here. Hello, Arvind.
Hello, everyone.
He's quite chipper considering the Leeds result last night. We'll come to that in a minute. Craig Wilkie is all chipper and long-haired, like Jesus-like this morning, evening even. Hello, Craig.
Good evening, Ross. Wait, we were supposed to watch football at the weekend.
Oh, great.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, you can get in touch via social media. Follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. It's BFM Football. Interact with us. Also, well, I was going to say take part in our fantasy football, but you can't anymore because we've shut it this season. BFM's Fantasy Football League is brought to you by my-soccer.com. Right, let's get on with the football then. Cristiano Ronaldo cheered from the moment he left the team coach on its arrival at the ground, cheered throughout his warm-up. They sang his name when the game started. There was so much noise around Old Trafford. It was party atmosphere, Cam Razlan. Surely you must have enjoyed that.
I did. I bet you were sitting there with tears in your eyes, weren't you, Ross?
I honestly haven't heard such a loud noise. It was Sir Alex Ferguson's last game. The last time it was that kind of feel and atmosphere. Amazing.
It had a Ferguson feel about it. It was very exciting. It was the return of and amongst the goals as well. And it, yeah, the he's back, Jesse Lingard. I was very excited. No, it really was very exciting. But for me, what was really good to see for United, right, first of all, they were playing Newcastle United. So that's not
caveat.
Carried away. But was the extra dimensions that I think that he's able to give them, because United's been devolving into becoming a counter-attack team, and which to me is, this is Manchester United. They shouldn't just be scoring goals on counter-attacks. But now you had a poacher's goal from Ronaldo. You had a goal on the break. You had a goal, a very, very good goal from Fernandes. A good weekend for Portuguese. From distance. And then what I think was most interesting and exciting was they managed to thread their way through a packed penalty box and break down a solid defense with the final goal, which was, I think, the pick of the bunch, and Jesse Lingard. So I think that it augurs well, and they all look very happy. Actually, I was watching Pogba because I have doubts about Pogba, but when Ronaldo scored, he looked genuinely happy. So
7 assists now for Paul Pogba in 4 matches played. That's more than his entire 2 previous seasons combined. But harsh on Steve Bruce. from a football perspective, Craig Wilkie, Newcastle went there, obviously with a plan not to give anything away. And they did really well for most of the first half. They were about to go into halftime with the scores level. But then it's exactly that kind of tapping goal that United signed Ronaldo for, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. I'm going to sound like a bitter Liverpool fan in saying this, but I don't mean it as such. I didn't think United were all that great in the game. Honestly, I didn't. And the same goes for Ronaldo. And credit to him for the two goals. And there's skill in terms of being there in the right place. And he's added that dimension to his game, you know, playing as a centre forward more and almost that poacher's instinct, all of that. And he made some great runs. Well, I mean, we know all the qualities that he has. But some of his link-up play, he didn't look all that sharp to me. Obviously, it's his first game, okay? So people are still trying to figure out how he's going to fit into that side. I thought Sancho was very quiet again. He hasn't really come alive yet since he made the switch. But yeah, to go to Newcastle and your point, I was watching the interview with Steve Bruce after the game, and he was asked, the opening question was, how do you feel about the way your side played? And he just looked bemused because exactly as you said, for long spells of the game, Newcastle played really quite well and looked relatively comfortable, kept Manchester United at bay and even created a few things themselves. And that's where some of the slight concern for Manchester United might come. You know, Newcastle were actually able to create a few decent chances. But the problem for them, as has been the case for some time now, is that they were undone by individual mistakes.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper to start with. I mean, the first goal, it's a really good poacher's goal from Ronaldo's point of view, but that ball shouldn't be spilled. It's as simple as that.
In Woodman's defense, maybe it got a little deflection that put him off. That's maybe all I can say. But yeah, I know what you mean. You're spot on there.
One of the better goalkeepers in the league would be saving that.
Yeah.
And even the second Ronaldo goal against a good run, he gets some space, gets
through
a shot
his
away early. I'm still looking at a goalkeeper saving that 8-9 times out of 10, perhaps. So that was an issue. And then you know the Fernandes goal, for example, fantastic hit, but you cannot afford to give a player of that quality that much time and space, you know, just outside the box. He's obviously going to punish you in just the way that he did. So that will be the frustration for Steve Bruce for the good performance to all the positives he can potentially take out of the game. You still, if you're going to make basic defensive errors like that, you're going to put yourself under pressure. But what I think he will be happy with is that when they did get forward, I thought Sadio Maximin again, really, really sharp and direct. And he's going to cause defences problems. If he can stay fit all season, he's going to be a real thorn in people's sides. And, you know, his running really, really caused some problems. Although I thought Varane has settled in very well and has added another dimension to that United back line. But yeah, Newcastle were okay. And if they can play like that and cut out some of the really silly errors, then they'll have not a brilliant season, but they'll have an okay season, I think.
Yeah, poor old Steve Bruce. They were weakened as well, quite severely weakened, Newcastle, with no Shelby, obviously no Callum Wilson up front. Do you think they're going to be all right, Arvin, for the rest of the season, Newcastle?
It's tricky because they're in the relegation spots right now. Not too far away, my team is from that as well. And we play them next weekend, so that's going to be an interesting piece. Newcastle, for me, have started much better than I... Actually, not much better. Probably the same level that I expected them to start on the day itself. And I completely agree with Craig that they have to cut out all these individual errors if they stand any chance of actually avoiding the drop and trying to, and that's what they do year on, year on. But back to United, the Ronaldo piece and how this entire piece has happened, it's almost like a sports documentary. I mean, from the point of him on the flight and from the point of him, the fans chanting his name, even after the game when he was giving an interview, there were fans still stayed back and were still chanting his name. And when you have someone like that that comes in with that level of magnitude, you don't need the team to play well because he will deliver. He's delivered that year on, year on. So even United can afford this season to have poor performances, but he will bail them out. And that's what he does. Last night, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came out and said that I'm not going to use him in every game. But really, he brought Ronaldo and he put him in right on the start and he played the entire 90 minutes. Obviously, he probably wouldn't play in the Champions League against a team like Young Boys. But you expect him to be at West Ham next weekend because that's what he will do. He will come and he will deliver year on year. He gets you the goals, and that's the type of player he is. So I think it's a brilliant signing, and it puts them right up there as one of the favourites for the title.
I wonder how you measure the lift in a team that a player brings. He must be at least, 30, 40%?
Everything. Yeah. Exactly, everything. People will be training better. The fans will feel better. The manager will feel more confident. Every opposition, the Newcastle players, and I brought what Craig said about the third goal. I'm not surprised that the Newcastle players, when they allowed Bruno that much space, because two or three of them had in their mind, okay, where's Ronaldo? We need to stop him at the hand.
Yeah,
right
instead
now.
Of closing Bruno down.
Exactly. That's the effect that he has. Yeah. So it's scary for everyone else this season.
All right. We can't spend all show talking about CR7. I'd love to, but no, we can't, alas. The Saturday early kickoff was quite good fun. Odson Edouard introduced himself to the Premier League, signed for what, 20 odd million, was it, from Celtic? He scored 41 goals in the Scottish Premier League in two seasons. Okay, I mean, the caveat is it's a Scottish Premier League, you'll say, but you've got to know where the goal is. 41 goals is still something, and what a way to introduce yourself, Cam. 28 seconds he came on. I believe it's the second fastest in history. But Spurs undone. They're +3 goal difference just gone in one game. Oof.
I actually watched this one on extended highlights, and I misread the scoreline. I thought it was Spurs 3, Crystal Palace 0. So even up until, I think it was like the 70th minute when Spurs had the red card, I was thinking, wow, this is going to be one hell of a turnaround because Spurs are terrible. This is Crystal Palace all the way. With Zaha and Conor Gallagher now, and indeed with Edouard, this is turning out to be pretty interesting lineup. So when Zaha was standing over for the ball for the penalty, I was thinking, oh, poor old Crystal Palace, he's going to miss it. This is such a shame. They've done so well. But then he scored, and of course I realized then Spurs were abject. They were so bad, and I felt like they looked unhappy. They played like unhappy people who were trapped in a dream that had gone wrong. Just a few seasons ago, they were playing some of the most exciting and winning football. It's unusual for Spurs to play exciting and winning football, and it's been let go. And so, you know, can you imagine? Crystal Palace is in the ascendant. They have the dream, whereas
actually,
Spurs,
nothing
to look forward to.
Actually, Bob on Friday alluded to this Palace being maybe something more in them. And Conor Gallagher, you're right to bring him up. But first, let's talk about Spurs. They were, I thought, a little bit unlucky because Eric Dier got taken off. And that was all Hugo Lloris's fault. Seriously. Took his own defender out. And then the Jafet Tanganga, two yellows. I mean, you can't coach savvy into a young player who's hot-headed, you know, in a Premier League game, Craig Wilkie. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but with two defenders gone, you've got your third, fourth choice on the pitch, and you're trying to hold back a team who's got a man advantage.
Yeah, nothing went right for Spurs, and it's a wake-up call for them.
Yeah.
Let's start with Tanganga. I mean, yes, he's a young player, inexperienced. You can put all those caveats against it, but the bottom line is it's unprofessional. I mean, to pick up the first booking is just for a bit of nonsense, you know, with Zaha. There was nothing really in it in the initial challenge. And then having picked up a booking, how you can dive in for a challenge like that right in front of the referee in an area of the park where there's no danger whatsoever. You've got very little chance of winning the ball. And you just give the referee such an easy decision to make. It was absolutely a second yellow and off he went. And from that point, but Spurs didn't start.
No.
I mean, Palace came out and looked, I can understand Cam's confusion because one team looked like they were playing with the confidence at the top of the league and one team looked like they were playing together for the first time. There was absolutely nothing from Spurs. And I know they were missing Son, for example, but Kane just looked dejected. I wonder what's going through his mind, you know, having probably built himself up for the likelihood of a move. And I'm sure he's a very professional guy. He'll have accepted that it hasn't happened and he will give his all. There's no question around that. But he got so little service. And then they just got bossed out of the midfield. And Palace, so much credit to them. And, you know, we can all rush to judgment sometimes. I can remember the first game of the season where they played so poorly at Chelsea. And we were all thinking, okay, Vieira's come in here. And I'm not quite sure how this is going to pan out. But he's turned it around so far in a very short period of time. And Edouard, who, yes, okay, I'll take your caveat about the Scottish League. But I've seen a fair amount of him up there. And they have got themselves a complete striker.
Yeah.
He has got a little bit of everything. He's got some pace. He's got a good touch. He knows where the goal is. And I was actually quite surprised that he went to Palace. There was rumours of interest from Arsenal or some other clubs. Well, are Arsenal even a bigger club? Maybe.
definitely, that's a different show altogether, that one.
Exactly. Definitely, he could. I think he will prove to be a hit in the Premier League. And maybe even as early as next summer, you might get other clubs coming in for him as quickly as that. But yeah, great performance result for Palace. And Spurs, although they were top of the league going into the game, they hadn't been entirely convincing over those first three games.
No.
So Nuno knows exactly the job that's ahead of him now, if there was any doubts before.
Yeah, I mean, what a buzz for Odson Edouard. Two goals is going to stand you in good stead. But just to go back to this Palace side and pick on Conor Gallagher, Arvin. He's on loan from Chelsea. He's literally a Mason Mount clone, if you like. He plays the same kind of role. He's as pesky to defenders. He makes chances. He takes chances. I mean, you look at him and you think, wow, what a dearth of excellent youngsters this Chelsea squad have.
They have, and they've loaned quite a few of them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can understand now why Chelsea didn't put the option for Palace to buy, because they probably see him as one of their future. But I thought, again, he was brilliant. Like, he was brilliant again in the West Ham game two weeks ago as well. I mean, he's always looking for the ball. He's always in the right positions. He's constantly... He could have even got a goal in the first half.
Yeah.
So when we look back at this game and we think that Jafet Tanganga's red card kind of turned it, not really, because even before that, Palace were pretty much at the ascendancy and Spurs were just passive. They needed to be aggressive, but they were just passive. And the good point that you guys made earlier about Harry Kane, this is the first time ever in history when he's completed 90 minutes, he didn't have a touch, or he didn't even have a shot in the opposition box. And that is just... These are the type of games that Harry Kane... It's fine to win first three games 1-0, 1-0 and be top of the table. But then when it comes to games like this, he'll think to himself, okay, this is the reason why I wanted to leave, because these are the type of games that will prove that Spurs are not going to win something this season. And I'm stuck here again in limbo. So you got a feel for the guy. But credit to Patrick Vieira, honestly, best performance for them of the season. And he's never lost to them, even as an Arsenal player. So he's continued that as in his managerial stint with Palace. So well done.
I don't feel for Harry Kane as much as I feel for those managers who bought him in this weekend and captained him. First break, back right after this.
Not for one moment in truth has there been the merest hint that the big league would be beyond them. The reality is that they have improved it.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
And you're thinking, well, will he look to knock it inside? Well, goal scorers tend not to. And that's inch perfect.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Back on a lovely Monday evening with Cam Razlan, Craig Wilkie and Arvin Sidhu, looking at the weekend's football. Arsenal are off and running 4 games into the season. They get their first goal, they get their first win, thanks to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Bit fortunate, if you ask me. Norwich tried to put up some resistance, Cam, but, I mean, it was always going to be an Arsenal win. And Arteta, I read afterwards, said, this last 10 days culminating in the win has been the best 10 days in my coaching life. I thought, wow, that's a pretty low hurdle.
That's an interesting thing to say. Relegation 6-pointer this early in the season. It was very exciting as such to watch. I think Arsenal's only second to bottom because their name begins with A. And you said that, you know, only Arsenal will win. Only if one team has to win. I wouldn't have put money on Arsenal necessarily winning it. But I was thinking ahead, you know, like, if what is the project, the Arsenal project? It's like, just have young, quick players and then pass to Aubameyang to score a goal. But the league is now full of young, quick players with teams playing greater dimensionality and skill. I bet if you put the Arsenal youngsters up against Cristiano Ronaldo in a 100-meter race, Ronaldo would be up there, if not beating most of them as well. You know, it's not 1995 anymore, where as long as the players go on the pitch not drunk, then there's a good chance of winning.
That was rare back in the day, not drunk.
Oh, okay. All right. 1990. I don't see what this great Arsenal project is. You can't just keep... They missed out. There are many of these young French second division players who are being snapped up by others, which used to be traditionally Arsenal's domain, and they're going to other clubs, and they're doing very well there. And I don't know, what is Arsenal these days? I really couldn't care less.
Oh, oof, oof, Cam, oof. Look, speaking up for Arsenal fans, I know there are a few. I actually know a few as well. There are some plus points from the game. Arteta's new signings mostly played. I mean, Aaron Ramsdale kept a clean sheet in goal. The Japanese defender played the full game. Clean sheet there. Ben White came in, I thought. And then Thomas Partey came off the bench. So lots to look forward to. Gabriel as well, embedded back into the side. So, I mean, it's going the right way, Craig, even if Cam pours cold water on it.
A very existential take on Arsenal from Cam there. Get started. Who are they? What are they for? what I will say about this Arsenal performance and victory is that they had a lot of pressure going on them going into that game.
Yeah.
That was the thing that they had to handle. And Arteta most of all. And, you know, often when we talk about pressure, we talk about confidence, we talk about it in relation to players. But let's not forget how it affects managers. I can always remember Gary Neville talking about his time at Valencia as a young, inexperienced coach and saying that when results start to go against you, it's so hard for a manager because you start to doubt everything. You start to doubt the routines you're doing on a Monday morning. You start to doubt every player and the team selections that you're making. You start to doubt the formation and the tactics. And so all of that pressure comes on you and you become the one who's responsible for it. And you can see, Arteta, how heavy that weight has become that he's had to carry.
Yeah.
And some of it has been of his own making, of course, but some of it has been other factors around the club that we've discussed previously. So he knew that if Arsenal didn't win that game at home against Norwich, that pressure would just go to a whole different level. And to be fair, they came out and it wasn't the most convincing win in the world by the scoreline, but actually they dominated that game from start to finish.
Do you know what helped?
Against the poor Norwich, yes.
Yeah, do you know what helped? The fact that Spurs lost. That was the early kickoff, remember? So Arsenal came out the blocks flying, didn't they?
That must have added something to their energy levels or whatever. But, you know, I think they had something like 30 shots on goal. They really did deserve it. But the question is, can they take that on now? Can they put together... not even results. Can they put together three or four good performances at that level with some of those players that you've mentioned coming back? I think he will take positives from the like of, you know, Odegaard coming back in. Looks settled in that role. Saka, we know what a great summer he had with England. There's some quality in that team. It's just about, can he get the best out of them? Can he find the right way to fit them all together? And then they should get some results. I don't see them qualifying for the Champions League, but they should at least get some results.
All right. Three massively valuable points there for Mikel Arteta and Arsenal. If we're talking about inspiration from earlier matches, Romelu Lukaku would probably have watched. Actually, if you see the behind-the-scenes pictures, you would think that Romelu Lukaku was actually at Old Trafford, Wenger United, but that was Stormzy. Anyway, I digress. What was that? Romelu Lukaku would have been inspired by Cristiano Ronaldo's brace and Chelsea. Welcome Aston Villa to the bridge. And wow, those two goals from Lukaku, Arvin. The first one, the commentator said he sent Axel Tuanzebe to the stands for a hot dog.
Yeah, Axel Tuanzebe is probably still sliding in trying to clear that ball right now. But it just shows that nature of how much Lukaku has developed mainly at Inter Milan under Antonio Conte. He's a different striker to when he's standing with Manchester United. His touch is better, his awareness is better. He's still very strong, but now he looks lean and strong. And that's what's very, very worrying for a lot of defenders. If there wasn't the Ronaldo transfer, Lukaku would be the main guy that we would be talking about. He's kind of gone under the radar because so much of attention has gone on to Cristiano Ronaldo. But interestingly enough, throughout his entire career, this was Lukaku's first goal at Stamford Bridge. He says he's dreamed it since he was 11. It just shows how much it meant to him. Chelsea, I think now the only team to record 600 Premier League
600 points in the Premier
exactly.
League.
Yeah, exactly. After Manchester United, so that's another very
690
for them.
In case you're
okay, wondering. All right, yeah, okay. but other than that, while we talk a lot about good things with Lukaku, I thought Mateo Kovacic was just absolutely amazing.
Agreed.
I mean,
as opposed to Sal.
As opposed to Saul. I mean, Kante was injured. Jorginho was on the bench. Saul was very new and he struggled with the intensity.
Wow, did he struggle?
He did. But Kovacic had to stand up and deliver. He had to stand up and deliver. He got one goal. He got one assist. And he's one of those players that if you win the championship, yes, a lot of the plaudits go to Lukaku and the defense, but it's the guys in the middle that do that work. And Kovacic is a perfect example for that.
Yeah, at poor old Aston Villa, they were massively hampered with Emi Martinez, the goalkeeper, missing because Jed Steer is different gravy in a different kind of way. He's more watery kind of gravy with lots of powdery bits on top. And you know what I mean? But this Chelsea side, Cam, wow. Yeah. I mean, Lukaku, yeah. Like Arvin said, he is literally, you could say him, Lewandowski, the best number nines in the world.
And also with, you know, Lukaku, Arvin mentioned that he's strong, but in the goals that he scored here didn't really depend on his physicality. These were very skillful goals.
Skillful,
the first goal,
absolutely.
The first goal, I was thinking, I mean, I cannot imagine being under the kind of pressure to make those decisions, to make the cutback and then slot the ball past the goalkeeper whilst 50,000 people are shouting at you. The coolness of mine. And also to highlight how just simply destructive Chelsea were. Aston Villa were very good.
Yeah.
Compared to, we're going to talk about Liverpool and Leeds later. The opposition here was good. They, especially in the first half, they had some chances themselves. But the addition of Lukaku, I couldn't see a flaw with Chelsea. Very scary. And it's a team I normally don't like.
Aston Villa had four chances in that first half, and four of them came from Saul losing the ball. He was actually hauled off by Thomas Tuchel at halftime. All right, let's quickly move on to Man City before we get to the break. They won 1-0 at the King Power Stadium. Tough old game. I think it's the third time they've met Leicester this season already, Craig Wilkie. But an important win. Bernardo Silva, yet again, who needs a number nine when you're Pep Guardiola with a squad of midfielders?
Yeah, he's going to test that theory again, isn't he, of how far you can go without a centre forward. I mean, I know they've got Jesus, but he didn't have his best game again in playing in that role. I wonder, it was a very even game. It didn't quite live up to maybe some of the pre-match hype for me. And I think both sides were wary of each other, very familiar with each other. As you say, they played a lot in recent times. And it was a little bit of cancelling each other out, especially in midfield. But I just wonder if this is a slightly more pragmatic version of City that we're seeing now, and whether that's a deliberate decision that Pep has taken or whether he's been forced into it to some extent. We know that he wanted Kane and that didn't happen. It's a little bit baffling if there wasn't a more obvious replacement that they had, you know, up their sleeve should that deal not go through. And it was left very late. And then, of course, once it collapsed, there was very little time to try and get somebody else in. I'm not sure that Pep was ever very serious about bringing Ronaldo in either. I think that was maybe more media speculation than anything else. So he's going to have to work with those players that he has by and large. And of course, he's brought Grealish in. I think Grealish has made a good start. He's been at the heart of a lot of the good things that City have done so far. But let's not forget just how good City have been defensively over the last two or three seasons. They give away very, very little. And that's been core to how they've gone about winning things. And that will remain the case. They got another clean sheet there. Didn't create a lot, but actually the Bernardo Silva goal was a really good finish. You know, it looked quite straightforward, but there was a very deliberate way they had to lift it up over the goalkeeper and the defender as well to make sure that it didn't get blocked. And maybe, you know, De Bruyne was still on the bench. He's maybe not fully fit or whatever. And so you miss, obviously, the creativity that he brings. But that the game could have, a draw wouldn't have been an unfair result, to be absolutely honest. And the Vardy offside goal was maybe one of the real big
armpit
points
off, maybe, yeah.
I think, again, we must be fair to the authorities that VAR has been used more sparingly and a lot better this season. I mean, we've been talking about it a lot less than we did last season. But that was a very big moment. If that had gone in and Leicester got the lead at that point, then could have been a different game. But City have got that resilience about them, managed to keep playing, get the goal, and Pep will just be happy to bank the 3 points and move on from that game, I think.
All right. Well, City have Champions League midweek, and Leicester have Napoli on Thursday in the Europa League. Another break. We'll be back on the other side of this.
Perfect distance. His left foot is an absolute wand. The technique is exceptional. Guaita, no chance.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, become all too easy now. That pass, that's the difference between the sides today.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
And we are back. Craig Wilkie, Arvind Sidhu and Cam Raslan joining me this Monday evening to look back at match week 4 over the weekend. What a lot of exciting games to talk about. Of course, you can follow us on social media. It's BFM Football on Instagram and on Facebook as well. Leeds United 0, Liverpool 3. Is not going to be, well, it is going to be painful for Arvind Sidhu to talk about, but we'll come to him later. First, Cam, I mean, from a neutral's perspective, what did you think of the game? It was manic when it started. It was 100 miles an hour.
As it should be in a match between Liverpool and Leeds. What would you expect otherwise? Liverpool are very good. They've got all those key players from their title winning team of a couple of years ago now, and they played in their style and they were very effective. But if you were wanting to line up an opposition that would highlight their style, you would choose Leeds United, because they play a similar style. They're safety last, very open, and I'm getting very concerned for Leeds. And one thing in particular was the second goal, which was a corner. Leeds have conceded more goals on corners than any other team, I think. And that, like, 17 or 18% of the goals against have come from corners. And
wow.
you would have thought, hey, let's work on our defense against corners.
Stato Cam. I like it.
You put Van Dijk in there and it's like, oh, we've just conceded a goal on a corner again. And so I mean, I want to find out how unhappy I think Arvind should be at this time.
Okay, we'll come to Leeds in a sec. I thought, first of all, corners and headers, Van Dijk had a golden opportunity. He should have headed that one in. But obviously, really unfortunate injury to Harvey Elliott. It looked like a nothing challenge in real time. And, you know, it probably wouldn't have even garnered a card. So from Strike's point of view, I'd say he was a bit unlucky. It was unfortunate. His ankle just snapped. Craig Wilkie, that aside, a lot to be happy about with the Liverpool display. I mean, the fact that Fabinho was awesome in that midfield role. I mean, capped it off with a goal. Him being awesome allows Thiago to come in and play football, doesn't it?
It does. Like you say, a lot of positives to be taken from that game, but really, really gutted for Elliot. And I agree with you. I agree with you completely. There was no malice in the challenge.
No,
it was a little bit mistimed, but you could. And I agree. When I was watching it live, it didn't seem like it was a major incident. But as soon as it happened, then Salah's reaction and the way that the physio
exactly was, you can tell something's happened with from the players.
Then you thought, okay, this is not good at all. And he's been such a revelation at the start of the season. He's been Liverpool's creative spark alongside Salah himself. So he's going to be a massive loss if it turns out that he's going to be out for an extended period of time, which unfortunately it looks as though he might be. And for all the positives, and you can mention the players coming back, and of course having Van Dijk there in your defence, it's going to give you a massive lift. The whole team, the whole squad, having Fabinho being able to go back into that midfield role and play as well as he did. But when you lose a player like Elliot now, who's become a bit of a creative spark for you, Wijnaldum's gone, Shaqiri's gone, you start to look a little bit lighter in that role. And the other thing is, a lot of people are now coming out and saying, well, you know, Liverpool are back. They've got that team back, you know, from the title winning year. You know, starting to play a bit more like that again on the front foot, more aggressively. And all that is true. But the caveat I would make to that is, this is not the Manchester City that Liverpool beat to the title. This is not the Manchester United that Liverpool beat to the title. And this is definitely not the Chelsea that Liverpool beat to the title.
Yeah.
So it's not enough to go back and recreate 2019, 2020 form. The league has moved on. So you've got to raise your levels even beyond that. Now, it was a surprisingly comfortable game against Leeds. It really was. I was shocked by how poor Leeds were, but that's not Liverpool's problem. And they came out and they made sure that they were aggressive, that they matched Leeds. They weren't going to get outworked by them. And they just had that bit of extra quality, especially in the final third. And, you know, Salah's back playing really, really well. Alexander-Arnold, you know, who had some critics last season, maybe had a bit of a dip in form. He's shown that he's got so much quality and, you know, had the assist for the first goal. And just every time he goes forward, he looks really dangerous again. So hopefully, despite the injury to Elliott, a lot of good things for Liverpool to take out of that game and look ahead for the next few weeks.
Yeah, Mo Salah notched his 100th Premier League goal in the game. He joins a very exclusive club. Alan Shearer, 124. Harry Kane, 141. Sergio Aguero, 147. And Thierry Henry, 160. So, and Salah's got a few more in him yet, I think. From a Leeds point of view, well, it started going bad when Llorente had to go off injured. And then from then on, you know, you're asking your team to cope with a red card as well, which, wow, it is asking a lot, but worrying because they weren't really up to it in that first half, Arvin.
They weren't. This is relegation form. If you're looking at 2 points out of 12, it's relegation form. The point is that if Burnley get a draw tonight, Leeds are in the relegation spots. And that's maybe the kick that they need to kind of move on. It was always a tough start to the season because you've got Man United, you've got Liverpool. But the difference of this Leeds and last season's Leeds is there's a level of hesitancy when it comes to their play. You can see that they're taking more touches on the ball. You can see they're not as fearless when it comes to their passing and their interplay like what they did last season. They're not in the face of the opposition. And that's a really worrying factor. Leeds have gone through bad spells under Marcelo Bielsa before in the championship. They've gone sometimes when they've not won games for 7 to 8 games. It's a different kettle of fish. It's the Premier League. Every game is a tough game. They're saying that Leeds' fixtures have turned for the better now. Yes, because they've got Newcastle, they've got Watford, they've got a few other teams. But the point is, there's a lot of players in that team right now that are not performing at the level that's required. Players like Liam Cooper. I love Liam Cooper. He's captain extraordinaire, but yeah.
He's got mistakes in him.
Yeah, he's got a lot of mistakes in him. Stuart Ellis, Luke Ayling aren't at the levels that they require from last season. And those are the core Leeds players. And when the core doesn't perform, the rest of the things that you put around them at times wouldn't be up to that level as well. So Marcelo's got a lot to sort out. I still think relegation is not in discussion because I still think that they will come out of it. But they need to very, very soon because the longer it does, the more this is going to compound to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
they could have lost by more than 3-0, to be honest. The amount of chances that Liverpool have, they could have lost more.
One thing I will say about that game is having fans back. I mean, obviously the Leeds fans were all really gutted because they were seriously outplayed, but they made the best of it. They were singing songs. I mean, that was great. They were singing "Who's the Scouser in the Black?" The referee, Craig Pawson, is actually a Yorkshireman. So I thought, ironic. And then they cheered when he gave a free kick to Leeds. They cheered for ages. And I find things like that, I mean, it's a massive part of football. But yeah, Leeds United with work to do. Liverpool, are they back? Well, Craig's a little bit worried because everyone else got better, according to him. Watch this space. All right, just to wrap up the other Premier League scores, Brighton have started the season really well. I know you being a lifelong Brighton fan, Kamrazlan. You'd be happy with that 1-0 win against Brentford. I mean, Brentford were quite good in this game. Ivan Toney was really good.
Yeah, it was. They both teams were good. You say lifelong fan, obviously. You know, Facebook, for some bizarre reason, thinks that Crystal Palace is my team. They keep sending me updates on Crystal. I don't know why. Where do they get that from? Yeah,
you listen to the show, Cam.
I mean, they're okay, but both these teams and Leeds. I actually had Crystal Palace down as a surefire relegation team, but I'm changing my mind on that one now. And I was surprised actually that Brentford didn't. I was expecting them to win this game.
Yeah, I think a lot of neutrals were actually, or at least a draw, a high score draw or something like that. But it says a lot for the great work that Graham Potter is doing down there at Brighton. Wolves off to a winning start. Hwang Ki-chan scoring on his debut. Watford nil, Wolves 2. That too was a bit of a surprise result, Craig Wilkie, wasn't it?
I don't know. I've been impressed by Wolves this season, although they haven't been picking up points. You go back to the Manchester United game, and they, for long spells of that game, they match Manchester.
Tell
United.
You what, Craig, that lad in midfield, Francisco Trincão. Oh, wow. Yeah. He's got magic feet, hasn't he?
He does. He's got that little bit of street footballer about him. You know, just that ability to go either way. He's got a step over and just enjoys that part of the game, which is great to see. You know, a bit of an old-fashioned, I know he doesn't play really that far out wide, but a bit of an old-fashioned winger in the way that he approaches the game. You know, just willing to take players on. But an end product as well, you know, creating something out of the situations that he found himself in. And, you know, Wolves under a new manager, they're going through a bit of a transition. You know, there's been a few players that they've lost over recent seasons and they've had to rebuild a little bit. But, you know, Jimenez coming back in to lead the line, the likes of Trincão in midfield, and they've had a bit of defensive solidity about them for a while now. So there's a lot of things that they can build on. And this was a game that Watford played okay as well, actually, created a few things, but Wolves just had that bit of extra quality through the likes of Trincão. And I can see them having quite a good season again if they keep up that level of performance.
Yeah, I really like the Trincão. And he's Portuguese. They've got a lot of this type of players around. All right, it was goalless between Southampton and West Ham. Mikel Antonio was sent off. So if you captain him in your fantasy Premier League this weekend, which a lot of people probably would have because it's Southampton, then yeah, sorry. I tell you what, you lick your wounds whilst we go into another break, and we'll be back with all the midweek football after this.
Astonishing! The ultimate steal! How have they gone and done that?
Off the ball on BFM 89.9. Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Back with Cam Razlan, Craig Wilkie and Arvind Sidhu. Looking forward to the midweek football. Of course, European club football returns. There's a new competition, the Europa Conference League. Oh, what a mouthful. So that, along with the Europa League and the Champions League, you've got a full fixture in midweek, coupled with the Monday night match, Everton. Let's not forget them. Everton could join the guys at the top. They're currently on 7 points. A win would push them on to 10, along with Liverpool, Man United and Chelsea up the top there. They host Burnley. And I was reading an article, Cam, about Everton and how Rafa Benitez has literally spent £1.7 million in this transfer window. The thing is that the big caveat with Everton is they can't shift James Rodriguez. He's on a very cool quarter of £1 million a week wages. Nobody wanted to buy him, so he's stuck there. They're in a bit of a pickle, but I mean, Benitez, he shops in the basement when he has to, and he seems to do that well. Solomon Rondon joins him again. And, you know, I mean, what do you think? Can they beat Burnley?
Yeah.
It's a short answer.
Yeah. You know, so 1.6 million, is that, I think, what can you buy?
1.7, I beg your pardon.
What can you buy for 1.7 million? That's like going to the Daiso of footballers. It's But Solomon Rondon's good, and very good, actually. I'm surprised that James Rodriguez has... Well, maybe people read too much into a one good World Cup, but I'm surprised he hasn't. Well, I saw him when he first arrived, and I thought he was very good. That's a real shame. Yeah. But when you got Benitez, you're gonna. He's the most sensible, thorough manager, and I think Everton can only do well this season.
Well, Burnley might unveil their new signing, £15 million Maxwell Cornet, as they look for their first win of the season. It's a 3 a.m. kickoff, that one, early on Tuesday morning, Everton against Burnley. I know a certain Lin Chu who will be up watching that one, and then you'll see a depressing post on Facebook at like 6 in the morning or something. All right. Champions League action. Manchester United are first up. They play in Group F along with Villarreal and Atalanta. They're in Switzerland to take on Young Boys. It's Wednesday at 12:45 a.m. Young Boys currently third in the Swiss Super League. Craig Wilkie, I know you're well into the Swiss Super League. 5 matches played. Third in the Swiss Super League. Not a lot else I can tell you about them. They beat the league leaders FC Zurich 4-0 at the weekend. So not to be sneezed at, but you'd expect Man United to go and come away with 3 points, wouldn't you?
You would. And I am all about the Swiss League. But I think you've covered most of it. So we'll just talk about Manchester United. But overall, you know, you mentioned all those European leagues. We have everything except the European Super League. Right, which I was very much against, as most people in football were, but the Champions League does need reformed. I don't know if I'm alone here, but I'm not excited about this early round of fixtures in the group stages, and these feel like games that we've had before. We can predict the outcome of most of them. We can certainly predict the outcome of most of those groups of who's going to go on and qualify for the knockout stages, and it has lost a little bit of its glamour for me in all of that. So I don't expect anything other than a comfortable night for Manchester United. They'll be able to probably make a few changes because it's going to be another long, hard season. There's going to be a lot of games coming up. People are going to have to use their squads. And even the point about, you know, Ronaldo is he's in such phenomenal shape, but he is getting on. You know, you're not necessarily going to want to play him in every Champions League game for a fixture like this. So, but at the same time, you've got an opportunity of players who have come in, you know, Sancho, for example, who need that game time of trying to develop that relationship with their teammates, trying to fit in with the style of play. But, you know, if you look at it as a whole, Manchester United's season and the spending that they've done and the quality of the player that they brought in, the one question, okay, you could say centre midfield, but the one question mark that remains now is over Solskjaer himself.
Yeah.
Can he deliver against the expectations which are now on his shoulders? Can he do the tactical job that's going to be required of him? So even a game like this in the Champions League will be a good way of starting to try and gauge that with the squad of players that he has now.
Good point you make there. 3 years without a trophy for Ole. He now equals Dave Sexton, who I actually also used to quite like in the 70s and 80s. Dave Sexton was the last manager, 3 years without a trophy as well. All right, Young Boys against Man United is Wednesday, 12:45 a.m. Also in Group F, Villarreal against Atalanta. The two stronger teams in the group. They play Wednesday, 3 a.m. Chelsea are in Group H along with Malmo and Juventus. They host Zenit St. Petersburg of the Russian Premier League at the Bridge. Zenit are currently top of the RPL after 7 matches played. 2 points clear of Lokomotiv Moscow. They beat Grozny 3-1 on Saturday, because I do keep an eye on the Russian Premier League, as you know, Arvin Sidhu. But I mean, Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea, if it's in the German DNA, it's to do very well at Champions League football. And I mean, you get the impression it's all kind of this Chelsea squad is honed towards this kind of success, isn't it?
Exactly. And as defending champions, I expect them to just take it seriously. And on the day itself, when you look at a team like Zenit coming to Stamford Bridge, usually the Russians are more stronger, and they give an opportunity for themselves when they're playing at home. But when they go away, they struggle. Zenit actually managed by Sergei Semak, who's actually was quite a player back in the day for the Russians. But you would expect some rotation from the Chelsea squad. But then when you look at the rotation itself, the type of players that can come in. I mean, Christensen, who I think has been one of the best defenders this season, didn't even play on the weekend. You expect him to come and play in the Champions League. Then you've got Azpilicueta, who could come in as well. Jorginho, you would expect him to start. I don't think he would go with Saul in this game, even though Saul has got European experience, because he needs someone to kind of control things. So I would expect Jorginho to do that. Zenit, Artem Zuba is there, which has always been a Russian name that we've had for many, many years. But I can expect to just see this one way. Another comfortable Chelsea win to start their Champions League defense of the title.
Yeah, hard to see anything apart from a Chelsea win. In that group, Malmo take on Juventus at 3 a.m. Juve are, well, they're missing Cristiano Ronaldo. Let's just say that after four matches played in Serie A. Man City are in Group A. They take on Leipzig, who also missed someone. Leipzig missed their ex-manager, Julian Nagelsmann. He's now pitched up at Bayern Munich. He brought Bayern back to Leipzig at the weekend. Trounced them 4-1 on their home patch. So City play a Leipzig who are wounded at the moment, currently 13th in the Bundesliga after four matches played. They're only on 3 points. Now, City, whether or not they have a striker, Cam Razlan, Pep's always, he's made no secret, this is the one he wants. They too are trying to hone a squad. But, I mean, they're glaringly missing a striker, but you know, if anyone can win a Champions League without a striker, it's Pep Guardiola.
That's not true. he hasn't. No, hang on. No, Barcelona, did he?
I don't know. Probably. I can't
remember. But you mentioned going through life, and let's say he never wins it, and the only thing he doesn't win is the Champions League, and he would be considered a failure for that. He's done pretty well. But because it's the early stages of the Champions League and it's all blah, 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 and who cares? Because I think the top four of every table go through of the four teams. I mean, I really... So I'm going to offer you a factoid from the Russian League.
Top two.
I'm going to offer you a factoid from the Russian League. There was an away match in their version of the FA Cup. And the away journey was as far as Kuala Lumpur to London. Russia's a big place. So and imagine having to do that.
Yeah, you could probably say the same about the China League. Do they have Mongolia and stuff in the China, like South Mongolia or Northeast?
China is just one time zone, whereas Russia, I think,
yeah,
is
true,
about
true.
Seven.
Well, yeah, the Russian English side, Chelsea, should prevail in that one. Yeah. Malmo, Juve, as we say in that one. Digress to the other group. Man City, Leipzig, we were talking about. Club Brugge against PSG is the other Group A game. So Man City, PSG is worth talking about when that happens. Liverpool are in Group B and they take on AC Milan Thursday at 3 a.m. Milan beat Lazio 2-0 on Saturday to move second into Serie A after three matches played. Zlatan is alive and well. He's returned to score in his 24th consecutive season in a top flight. That's just a crazy stat. But I mean, Liverpool, it's got home win written all over it. It's 3 points, Craig Wilkie.
Possibly. We're so excited about this opening round of the Champions League that we've been talking about Russian time zones, you know. And I don't know what time zone Zlatan is in, but he seems to slow time down, doesn't he? The way he keeps going. He's got hair longer than me now. He's got an interesting new cut that he was showcasing at the weekend, but also showcasing the fact that he can still play at that level. You know, he came off the bench. He got the goal against Lazio, and he's one of those players, you know, not dissimilar to Ronaldo, that just his presence lifts those around him and causes issues for opponents just by virtue of him being on the pitch.
But they all come at a cost, Craig. They all come at a price.
Well, this is true. They all do. But Liverpool, I think, especially after that performance against Leeds, having made a good steady start this season, will definitely feel confident going into this game. But you know, should be a good fixture between two sides that are in form. But again, I go back to the point, you know, Liverpool, AC Milan, this should be a huge game that we're all really, really excited about. And we're not quite yet because of this stage that it's at the Champions League. And, and that's a little bit unfortunate in some ways. Yeah. At least having the fans back will give it that sense of occasion and will give it a bit of atmosphere and all of that. But I don't think this match will determine either side's fate for the rest of the group stages. Let's put it that way.
The other Group B game is Atletico Madrid against Porto. That's Thursday, 3 a.m. Leicester and West Ham are in the Europa League. Leicester hosts Napoli of Serie A. Napoli are currently top of Serie A after three played. So, Arvin, that one could be a tasty game, Leicester-Napoli.
Oh, no, this is the type of game I agree with Craig that the Champions League, maybe the allure isn't there at this early stage because you kind of can't predict what's going to happen. But And Liverpool's group, by the way, for me, is the group of death, because you've got four teams who can on the day, Porto, next champions, Atletico Madrid, don't take them lightly, and Milan are rejuvenated. So that, for me, it's quite a tough group that Liverpool are in. But when you look at the second-tier competition, having a team like Leicester and having a team like Napoli, the thought of them winning something, even if it's the Europa League at this stage, it brings so much to a club like that. Because for Leicester, they've won the FA Cup, they've won the Community Shield.
This is progression
to win
for both
something
sides.
In
Europe
would show genuine progress. And Napoli haven't won things since the days of when Maradona brought them the title. So the second tier competition, yes, doesn't get a lot of attention. But when you look at teams like this, who winning a cup even at that level would mean so much, it's always good to catch their journey. And I think this is going to be a fascinating tie between both the teams.
All right.
Napoli, for me, slight favourites on that one.
Oh, okay. The Hammers are away in Croatia. They take on Dinamo Zagreb, who are top of the Croatian league after 7 games played. Tottenham are in the Europa Conference. They are away at Rennes in France. Rennes lost 2-0 at home to Reims on Sunday. They are currently 11th in League One after 5 matches played. That's it. We're out of time. That's all your midweek football. Hope you enjoy it. I've totally enjoyed myself talking to the guys. So thank you, Cam Razlan.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you, Craig Wilkie.
Thank you, as always.
And thank you, Arvind Sidhu.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a great week. Enjoy the European football. Speak to you on Friday. Bye now.
And that is a super finish. And boy, they're welcome back. They are very welcome back.
Off the Ball every Monday at 8 p.m. on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.